Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And today we're talking about Season 6, Episode 2, titled Carrot and Stick.
Oh, what carrots. Oh, what sticks.
Yes, big, a very big stick.
Oh, I love it. I love it
what,
so much.
What is the phrase? Eat carrots and carry a big stick?
Eat softly. Carry a big carrot.
That's my philosophy. This is the return of the Kettlemans.
Yes.
AKA Return of the Kettlemans.
Glorious, if you're keeping infuriating score. Return of the Kettlemans.
Yeah, I did love seeing them back. What do you think of this episode?
I loved it. It was, I mean, it's a little unfair to judge the first episode because they were just kind of setting up a lot of stuff. But in terms of like my satisfaction after leaving it, I really enjoyed this episode, especially that final scene with Kim. Oh my God.
Yeah, there were essentially two scenes I liked from the first one. Really liked mm-hmm. The first one, and then the scene where Jimmy's scamming in the country club.
Yeah.
This time, I felt like at least half of the scenes were very entertaining.
Yes.
Everything with the Kettlemans was great.
Mm-hmm.
The Nacho stuff was a little bit more interesting. Like, yeah, a lot of time, he's still just waiting a lot of the time, but like toward the end of it, it gets more interesting. And all the stuff that Mike was doing, I guess, which is kind of like directly related to the Nacho stuff. That's the most interesting part of that stuff.
Setting more stuff up. Yeah.
And it sets up like big questions that I have, like, what the hell are you doing, Gus? When we get to those scenes, I would like to ask you that question because I have no idea what his plan is. And that's what I love this show the most is when, like, I know that they've thought of something clever,
right?
And more clever than I can come up with after watching it, even after they've given me clues. I just thought this episode was pretty excellent all around.
My favorite thing is whenever things almost make sense, but not quite. And that gap is like where suspense lives. It's amazing. Yeah.
Like, I see what you're doing with this and that, but it's leading up to this, and I don't know why you would do that. That seems crazy.
Yes. Very satisfying.
All right. Well, do you have anything else to say about this episode generally, or should we get into the recap?
Let's just get into the recap.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on a series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, we open on Nacho's place in Albuquerque, where his girls are having what amounts to a blast while he's gone. Mike, Tyrus, and a safecracker come by to kick the girls out and do a switcheroo.
Got something against Domino's?
I don't.
What amounts to a blast?
Well, she is definitely having a blast. Girl on the couch, I think, is a little more mellow. I don't know that she's really having a blast.
But I don't know that she's high. That's the thing.
She's like, high in a different way, I think.
She's low.
Well, okay, but whenever somebody's been smoking the doja, you don't say that they're low, you say that they're high, right? I called it doja, that's right.
Okay.
I see you looking at me.
I mean, I knew what you meant. Yeah, I don't know. One of them is definitely having a different reaction. She's bouncing off the walls.
She's
bouncing
tweaking,
off the dominoes.
Sure. Oh, yeah. She's on that stepped on whatever they sell.
Yeah. She's borderline overdosing on fentanyl or something. She's gone crazy. And yeah, the whole house is like ruined. I'm trying to think how long Nacho has been gone. It's been like 2 days, maybe.
I mean,
at this point, three,
yeah, the time
max.
It takes to get to wherever the hell they were in Mexico.
So they left in the
Chihuahua.
Middle of the night. They get there in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it took more than one full day to drive there. So
I feel like it probably hasn't been more than a few days. But they are like, they're ordering food in. They've got munchies. There's cereal just like everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. This house is ruined. Like, you can't. It's a good thing Nacho's not coming home because you have to buy a new house.
Wow.
Can't
ruined.
Salvage it. Yeah.
All right.
Burn it to the
okay.
ground.
Okay. Well, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
It is going to get more ruined as we progress.
But yeah, the thing that's happening here is like Mike showing up, right?
Yep.
And then he's here to crack the safe, sort through it. My impression of what Mike is doing here is that he is scrubbing this place clean of anything that might tie Nacho to Gus,
mm-hmm.
making sure there isn't anything incriminating in his safe, and then replacing the safe and all the money and hinting at where Nacho is
right.
to the people he knows are coming later, Salamanca's guys.
And nobody would suspect that this had happened because this is crazy. This is a crazy amount of work to go through.
It is, yeah. And that's what I always love about Gus. Like, Gus goes overboard with just making his plans absolutely perfect.
I don't understand.
To the letter.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just get somebody to, like, crack the safe a more conventional way?
Maybe it's hard. I don't know.
Maybe it's hard. Yeah, maybe he has the best safe.
Because Charlize Theron's not available for casting.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's a reference to something. Good pull.
Italian Job.
Ah.
I think she's a safecracker in Italian Job. I don't know.
Ooh, don't quote me because I won't quote you.
No, you're right. It's a ton of work, but A, that's what I love. And B,
it's very Gus.
You're right. This is like so above and beyond. No one would ever suspect. Mm-mm. As a matter of fact, like, I'm not even sure why they don't take some of that money. Because, like, who's to say how much money Nacho has? You could take half of it and be like, this is the cost. This covers the cost of the safe and the man hours to replace it and cut into it and hire the guy to crack it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you could have taken a couple stacks.
Who would notice?
No one.
Nobody.
They don't know how much he has. Nacho's never coming back here, right?
No, I highly suspect he isn't. There was one nice little detail. Mike pocketed Nacho's dad's Canadian ID, but leaves Nacho's behind.
Oh, did he take it?
Yeah.
Okay,
he
wasn't
put
sure.
it in his pocket. Mm-hmm. So he's still trying to keep people who aren't in the game out of the game.
Yeah. It's
admirable.
Yeah, for sure. You can definitely tell he doesn't want Nacho's dad mixed up in this.
And yet he's still planting a letter that's going to lead everybody straight to Nacho. Not a letter, a bank statement.
This is the what the fuck question that I
have. Yeah. So I listened to the Insider podcast, and their sort of loose explanation for this was basically like, it was out of his hands. He couldn't do anything. He wasn't in charge of the call, so he just went along with it. But that seems very against his character.
Wait, what was the excuse? Who was
it? The excuse was that Gus told him to do it, so he did it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Like, Mike leaving the thing, pointing him at Nacho, mm-hmm. is part of Gus's plan, but to what end? Like, that's the crazy thing to me is, like, over the course of this episode, we understand if they get a hold of Nacho, they can directly link this to Gus, take Nacho to Eladio, have him confess, like, torture it out of him, and then...
Yeah.
And then Eladio's going to kill Gus. Like, why would Gus want to point them to where Nacho is? That's the craziest thing to me. And there's got to be a reason. That you can't just gloss over that and say, like, oh, well, he thought Hector would kill him, not keep him alive and try and squeeze information out of him.
It makes no sense, yeah, that he would just immediately kill him.
Right. No, he would try and figure out, like, Juan Bolsa wouldn't let him, right? Because Juan called him last episode and says, we're going to find out. We're going to get Nacho and find out who he's working for. Like,
yeah. Is it possible that the amazing Gustavo Fring could be, like, minimalizing his danger here? Like, maybe he...
I mean, he does that occasionally, sure.
He does.
But, like, not in ways this sloppy. Not in, like... I don't know. If he were just like, oh, these idiots aren't going to figure anything out and I'm just going to flaunt it. It doesn't seem like Gus to me. Gus dots all his I's and crosses all his I's as well.
He does. So why the hell did he give up Nacho?
I don't know. It's the number one question I have coming out of this episode is, what is his plan? Because it can't be just what we saw here.
No.
Because it's not a plan. It's a stupid plan.
It is a stupid plan. It puts Nacho right in the hands of the people that he doesn't want him to be in the hands of.
Yeah.
And he's a squealer. You can tell Nacho's a squealer. Bless him.
Maybe.
He's a bunny. Yeah.
Yeah. This was Tuco. Maybe not, but...
No, Tuco would just stare and then, like, cut your face open or something. Smash it into the table. All right. We have the show theme. And then we are cutting to Jimmy and Kim at the apartment workshopping new ads for Saul Goodman. Kim seems unimpressed with his copy.
Yeah, and comes up with better ideas, as she does now.
She does. I was waiting for that little line from the trailer for the season where she's like, Saul Goodman fights for you, but apparently that's coming later.
Gotcha. The line she does deliver is, you are going to hate this. And I hear that line and I can't help but wonder, is she subconsciously punishing Jimmy?
I've thought that a couple of times.
Like, she could have come up with another idea, but the idea she came up with just happens to also punish him.
Just happens to also make him have to deal with irritating people.
I'm wondering if there's a little bit of that in there, because he's put her through so much shit.
All of this stuff. I feel like as soon as he did what he did going into the desert with Cartel, when she like could not have been clearer. God,
right?
I do not want you to, I don't like this. I do not want you to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, I'm doing it. So where are we at?
Right.
Yeah. I feel like ever since then, she has had just a little bit of a chip on her shoulder. Reasonably, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of the reason why she is endorsing, like, whole hog, the Saul Goodman thing. Just maybe she has a morbid curiosity of how far he actually will go if he isn't impeded in any way.
Yeah.
You know?
Could be. And the look on her face is like, I know she's excited to have figured out a way to pull this off. But there's also something, I read something else into it. Maybe this is just me reading too much into it, but... Definitely like a smile on her face when she says, you're going to hate this.
Ray's doing some amazing stuff with her face.
Oh, she's always great.
Always, but especially now that she is going to the dark side a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so much fun to watch. I'm all for it. Okay. We are cutting to Gus and Tyrus at the chicken trailer once again, where Tyrus has laid out the whole investigation for Gus. All on the table. Just pictures and blood and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And dental work.
Yeah, Tyrus mentions that the dental records match. Ugh. Which is how I knew for sure that I was right in the first episode.
Right.
Yeah.
The body double stuff.
Yup.
Yeah. I find it hilarious every time someone says Don Juan. Because I'm a child.
Well, yeah. Me too. They said Don Juan, and I looked at you like, what? Who's that? Bolsa, obviously.
Yep. And they have another thought about how they might keep the peace. We end up finding out that is Gus apologizing to Hector.
Which, later, weird, terrible. Yeah.
I don't think anybody took that scene seriously, right? Like, except for Juan. Juan is such a dummy.
Juan is really... Now, he's the one who is very good at deluding himself that everything's okay. He wants so desperately to believe that everything is okay.
Yep. And the other thing about this scene is, like, this is the inciting thing where Gus realizes, okay, I can kill two birds with one stone, right? I can go over and apologize to Hector.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that smooths things over. Maybe it doesn't. It doesn't matter, because what I'm also there to do, like the main event, is for me to look this man in the eyes, be the human lie detector, pull out a little Tuco action, and determine, is Lalo alive? Can I get him to slip up and tell me just through his reaction to me?
If he knows something.
If he knows, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why he says, you know, I think I have another thought about how to keep the peace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does two things here, which I always love.
Yeah, fair point. Next, we are cutting to a few familiar inflated faces and egos in the form of Puffy Lady Liberty and the Kettlemans. The Kettlemans.
The Puffy Kettlemans.
They're puffier. No. Lady Liberty is puffy. I knew you were going to go here when I used the word puffy. Lady Liberty is puffy. Everybody else is fine. Aging is a natural process.
What's his name? I mean, they pointed out in the episode, right? They're like, oh, Corey, I can see it's you know, the joint has been good for you or whatever.
Right.
He's not. I don't know if he's less fit or more fit. Can't tell with the big sweater he's got on. But
the implication is that he's more fit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is not puffy, I don't think. Puffy is like morning after a night of ramen and, yeah.
Ramen?
Yeah, man. Ramen make your face puffy.
What?
Ramen totally makes your face, but it's the salt. Makes your face puffy. You look at me like you've never heard such a thing in your life.
No, never. All right. Well, that explains why we don't eat it often enough.
I eat it too much.
Yes, the Statue of Liberty inflatable is the best thing. This is the one.
Is it the same one, do you think?
I think this is the one that... I think, or maybe the one that he gets later is better, because this one is pretty sad. It's
pretty sad.
Talk about puffy.
It's very puffy. Those arms.
The arms are
got
awful.
Got some mega arms. Yeah.
And they taper down like a smooth, like an octopus arm or something. It's not like, oh, I can see the
quite a bit
distinct...
more tentacular. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like it. Into the torch, which is the point. Yeah. It's.
I also don't like this trailer. This weird, like. It wants to be a cathedral of justice, but instead it's just a sad American trailer.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is giving Saul all kinds of ideas, right? These first two episodes are giving him ideas everywhere. The first one, Kim suggesting he gets a fancy car and the cathedral of justice, like you said. Here we're seeing the genesis of the Lady Liberty outside.
I heard a line. I don't remember if it was from a preview or a trailer or one of those, like, oh, in this season, blah, blah, blah. Like, maybe I watched that and you didn't. But there was a line that what Colonel Sanders is to chicken, Saul Goodman is to justice.
Great.
And I really love that. And it's very accurate.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
all I can think of when I see this puffy Lady Liberty. Also, his tie is all... It's bad, but not in the same way that his ties are usually bad. Like, the pattern itself is really terrible. Hmm. It looks like the cool S got really sad.
Okay. I can't picture that quite, but
you know, you like listening, you know what I'm talking about. It vaguely.
Because that's what I think of when I think of sad.
Yeah. It's lumpy and misshapen and droopy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely. So what the hell actually happens in this scene?
Jimmy goes in and Miss Kettleman says, "Get the fuck out of here." Like, I've never seen someone act
such an
this
immediate,
much
aggressive reaction right? to Saul Goodman. Yes.
She's fantastic. I love her in this.
Yeah.
But yeah, he comes in and says, "Hey, I might have a case mm-hmm. against Howard," and intrigues him. Like, that's what I love about Jimmy's plots, his schemes. He's always like,
he's always about just
planting the seeds of curiosity.
Yep.
And then when people inevitably come back to him, he knows he's got him hooked, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
He plays off people's greed every
and,
time.
And the way he does it is so smooth too. Like, this him going to them and saying, like, okay, you gotta sign these things, right? And he gets them to sign them. Is that in this scene? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the end of the scene.
He gets them to sign these papers, and they're like, "I don't care what you sign, what we signed,
mm-hmm.
You're fired." And after he tells them, like, "Hey, I've got this case because Howard might have been on cocaine, the coca."
You caught me off guard with that one.
Then they're like, "You're fired, and we're going to other lawyers." And when they say that, he's like, "Don't bother, because the moment you mention my name, I automatically get a cut."
Uh-huh.
Pretty much guaranteeing that they're not going to mention his name, which is exactly what he wants.
Yeah.
They need these people to go to Cliff with a case.
Not just Cliff.
Drop
all of the law offices.
Oh, that helps,
around.
Actually.
Yeah, within like a 10-mile radius.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, they are...
They're salting the earth.
Salting the earth. They're defaming Howard, essentially, to every office. And we got to see what happened with Cliff. I think that was their first stop.
I mean, that's their primary objective, right? Because they want the settlement money from Sandpiper. So they need Cliff to break off the case against Sandpiper, the HHM part of that, and just settle the case to be done with it so they can get the money. So yeah, that's a primary objective. But yeah, I didn't even think about going around to all the lawyers in the city.
And he's basically coached them on what to say in terms of accusing Howard. They're like, we'll find all that in discovery.
Right.
And they almost word for word. I'm skipping ahead of scene a little bit, but they repeat this.
But he also knows how much they hate him, specifically how much she hates him.
Yes.
And by saying the moment you mention my name, I get a cut, he knows she's not going to say anything about him.
It was perfectly designed. Yes, absolutely. And the smile at the end lets you know that all he really wanted was, one, these letters of engagement to prove that they did talk to him. There's something there.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like those might be important later on. And two, salting the earth. In terms of Howard's image.
Yeah, and making sure that Cliff can not take this case, but still see them and get the information about Howard that they want to plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good plan. It's subtle.
Seeds of doubt.
It seems like it was destined to work based on everything we know. That's what I love about Better Call Saul. They always have these ways of gathering up all the information we know and then coming up with the most intricate path through that forest of information to this perfect scheme.
Yes.
It's great.
It's amazing to watch unfold. And I actually got a lot from watching the show up till now in a binge fashion.
Yeah.
I feel like it was much easier to see the flow of how things happen.
Yeah,
and just totally. How what you were talking about, just how beautiful and intricate and subtle all these weird little schemes end up being and how they play into the future. Mm-hmm. It was very nice. I'm looking forward to watching this season again that way, just all together.
Yeah, once it's over, it'd be nice to go back and just binge watch this. Because I did come away with I was talking about this when I talked with Pete Peppers. Yeah. Came away with a new just appreciation for Better Call Saul in general. Mm-hmm. It's different, like podcasting about it every week when you're like, man, they spent so much of this hour just fucking around with Nacho, right. You know, like running north toward the border.
The great thing is
sitting in a hotel room and I feel like I'm trying not to do always, that because I know that on rewatch, this all hangs together and they always have a point to what they're doing. Pointless.
Yeah. Whether it's establishing mood or just giving you a little bit more insight into a character that ends up being useful totally. Two seasons down the road and you didn't even know.
Right.
Yeah. That's the stuff that's pretty magical on a rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Nacho, we're cutting right back to him sweating in this shitty little hotel room.
Yeah. Is this where he's like pacing up and down and climbing the walls and he can't even sit for 2 days when his life depends on
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yes. He is much more twitchy than I think I ever expected him to be.
I guess he just doesn't trust anybody, right? Like he doesn't trust that Gus isn't screwing him. He doesn't trust that the cops aren't onto him or that
he's peeking out the window.
Yeah, like he's kind of giving himself away.
But that ends up being useful in the future. Yeah. So I can't completely fault him for it. But at the time, I was like, what the hell are you doing? You're showing your face. Anybody with binoculars has got your number, man.
There's a guy outside, but it's not the guy we see later.
It's just some
crusty old dude smoking ground butts. It's gross.
Smoking ground butts.
Yep.
The context for that is he picked up a cigarette butt or something off the ground. But yes, ground butts. I like it. It's perfect. Really not much to say here other than Nacho is going crazy. And he sees a potential spy hole. And also someone's been leaving him food, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think that's intentional. He knew that would happen.
Yeah, but he's obviously in full like caged animal mode. I mean, he can't stand it. So next we go to the offices of Davis in Maine,
mm-hmm.
Where the Kettlemans have gone straight to Cliff to tattle on Howard.
Yeah. The thing I come away from it with is I'm surprised by Cliff's... I don't know if it's his willingness to give Howard the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if it's... naivete. I don't know if it's
some kind of weird field solidarity thing.
Maybe he's not connecting the dots really here as much as I expect him to. I guess they do linger on that final shot, right? Because when Aaron comes in, the prepubescent intern or whatever they call her.
God, yeah.
When she comes in, he's playing guitar and just noodling.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have this meeting with the Kettlemans, and he says, I can't take the case because it's a conflict of interest. He's working on this other case, which is brilliant. Kim obviously knew that would be his reaction, so he couldn't ever take the case.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they leave, he goes back to his guitar, but he doesn't start playing again. He's just kind of looking out the window.
Yeah, he goes to stroke a couple of notes, and he, like, stops.
Which is him going,
maybe,
Howard and Coke.
Yeah. Wondering if there is a little bit more to it, because I don't know what he's thinking in terms of what he saw the day before. And it had to have been like the day before.
Yeah, no, I think he's piecing it together. I think the way he reacts in front of the Kettlemans is different because, like you said, he doesn't want to throw a fellow respected lawyer under the bus.
Yeah.
Like say, oh yeah, I've some coke dropped out of his locker the other day.
Right. Yeah, he's not the type to do that. He's much more... not even just careful, but like, he's an okay person, I guess.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the better people in this show.
Yeah.
It's the best I can tell.
I think you're right.
But it's hilarious when the Kettlemans are trying to describe like, okay, he's taking coke while he was representing us. And he's like, that doesn't sound like the guy I know. And how did you find out this information? Mr. Kettleman's like, oh, it's common knowledge in the yard.
The yard, and and Cliff and Aaron are like, the yard. All right.
Yep. Good stuff.
Very believable. I always wonder this with Kim and Jimmy's schemes, to what extent they actually understand what is going through people's heads. Because I don't know if this is part of the plan that Cliff would not just immediately go off the deep end upon seeing cocaine fall out of a what do you call him? A colleague's locker.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they
do they know
they
that
seem
he
to have a good grasp
is going to minimize
on it,
right? And I wonder that he's minimizing it, and I wonder how long he's going to minimize it, and if that might be part of the scheme in some way. They're going to prove that Cliff knew about it.
Oh boy!
See,
and then they're like,
because those clients came to Cliff. Part of it, I think it'll just be part of it. Like oh, see, even other lawyers knew about it or something.
Could be. I don't know.
I don't know. I think they're gathering the tools.
Yeah, they're definitely planting seeds all over the place.
Yeah.
And watering
seed
them.
Seed bombs everywhere. Okay. In our next scene, we find ourselves in the hospice facility where Juan Bolsa and Gus visit Hector to give a lot of lip service toward cartel solidarity after this recent tragedy.
This is the handshake scene.
It's the handshake scene.
Yeah. This is the dual purpose thing I was talking about. Come here and maybe it's smooth things over. Who cares? But really here to find out, is Lalo alive?
Yeah. And Hector just immediately gives it away because he's Don Hector. You can't not. When he has something, he's just like a mean-spirited schoolboy, you know? Mm-hmm. So he has this confident smile when he shakes Gus's hand. And of course, Gus knows that not all is as it seems.
Who does he call? Mike? And say, Lalo Salamanca is alive. Lives.
That's a good question. I didn't think about it. Who did he call?
It's probably Mike. It's either Mike or
who
Tyrus.
Who else could he call? Yeah.
Tyrus seems to be his right-hand man right now. Like Mike is... I feel like Mike's putting up too much of a fight for Gus's liking.
Yeah,
he's not just rolling with the plan and willing to do anything.
Right. It's the same
friction
that's been between them from the very start. Yeah, plus he has all that baggage on his head now.
Yeah, I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
He's definitely like at arm's length.
Still trusted, but yeah.
Right. He's still respected,
I think,
is the most important thing. Yeah,
but not unmurderable.
For sure.
Although nobody in Gus's employ is unmurderable, as it turns out.
I did wonder, like, because it takes a good long while. You know, this is a very Better Call Saul scene. It takes a good long while for Hector to get his hand out there to shake it.
Yeah, I was fully expecting some half-hearted, like, jerk-off motion or something, because right. I am also, a mean-spirited schoolboy.
Yeah, and these guys hate each other, right? But
yeah,
Hector's trying to act like, oh, yeah, everything's fine. And he's trying to trick Gus here, and he's not good enough at it to trick him.
I don't even know that he's trying to trick him. I think he likes watching Gus sweat.
Yeah.
So I think he was not... I don't know that he actually gave a shit whether or not he revealed that Lalo was still alive.
Well, I thought he was going to give a shit, like literally. I thought he was going to shit himself just like
he
does.
Saw his face screwing up and you're like, oh, I know that face. That's poop face.
Right. Everybody stand
back.
So
he's about to poop pants.
Yeah, but apparently not. This was also good.
It was fine. It was fine.
And it evokes that too, right? Like everybody was sitting there. It wasn't just me. Everybody's sitting there going, oh God, this is going to be gross or something, you know.
Yeah.
And then just a handshake. I think the show knows what it's doing.
Oh, absolutely. Let's see. Okay. Then we are cutting back to Nacho's house, which has been freshly torn apart by, we're assuming, the Salamanca's men. Oh, and Juan Bolsa's there too, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. They find the lead that Gus's folks planted in the safe.
And again, I'm thinking, what the hell? Why would Gus want to point them to Nacho?
Because, there's a bank statement. That's what was in the safe. That's what they planted. It was a bank statement from Cayman Islands transactions. And at the very bottom is a phone number. It starts with 52. It's Mexico. And it goes straight to the Ocotillo.
Which is where Nacho's currently staying.
Yes.
Yeah, it's wild. At first I thought, oh, they're planting a whole bunch of Cayman Islands accounts with a bunch of money in it to make it look like Nacho was the guy who stole all that cartel money that Mike actually stole, mm-hmm. right? Because Mike, a few seasons back, two seasons at least, stole a bunch of money from Hector's trucks. Like,
yep.
went and cut tires open and stole
he was pissed off at him, so he interrupted his chain of supply.
Yeah. Right, for like killing civilians and all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Threatening his family.
And that's kind of what spun this whole thing off, right? Like, who is hitting our stuff? Like, it must be Gus. And it was causing problems for Gus because Hector was pointing the finger at him.
Right.
So I was wondering, like, is he trying to point the finger back at Nacho and say,
he's trying to completely throw money.
This
is
where all your money went.
Yeah.
But then he includes that phone number, and that's the big question mark. I just don't know why that's necessary or even advisable.
Why would you want the Salamancas to catch Nacho?
I honestly can't think of anything.
Because if he says, like, they're so against Gus already. If he says even a little bit about Gus, they're going to believe him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how much.
And Eladio's going to go after Gus.
Yeah, I don't know how much Gus can say, oh, no, he's just lying, when they already kind of half have it out for him. They're just waiting for an excuse, basically. It's a weird choice.
This is too early for, like, a bring it on kind of moment. And that's not Gus's style. Gus doesn't say, I did this. What are you going to do about it? Gus makes you think he never did it.
Right. Keeps his hands clean.
Yeah.
At all times.
So I'm shocked by it.
Except for Glass, occasionally.
Right. We'll see more of it later, I assume.
Yeah, obviously. And hey, speaking of Nacho, we're going back to him in his sweaty little hotel room where still the AC sweating. Does not work.
Yeah.
He can't take the pressure and noisily goes out the back way. He confronts the guy who's been watching him. There's some phone communication, and then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, I love there's a subtle moment here where Nacho sees the guy is watching him from one of the outbuildings, and he picks up his phone to go call his dude, right, and say, hey, they're watching me.
Right.
And he thinks better of it, goes out the back, and then makes the call after he's taken this guy hostage. And uses the phone call to prove that it's actually Gus who
is watching him.
Or
we think, because he doesn't end up answering that call. So we are led to believe that it is, Gus's people.
I mean, unless it's just a coincidence that the guy's phone rings at the moment after Nacho hangs up and says, I'm going to do something crazy.
Right. It would be a huge coincidence. I would hope that that is what they're intimating, is that Gus's guy has been who's watching
him. But again, to what end? Are they... maybe this
dots.
Is making more sense. Okay, so use Nacho as bait to bait out the heavy hitters of the Salamancas. So say... because Gus knows where Nacho is. He doesn't need somebody watching Nacho. They're delivering food to his front door. They could just be sitting out in their Jeeps watching him.
Yeah.
But if you have somebody covertly watching Nacho, they could be waiting. Like, Gus could direct Hector's guys, probably the cousins, out to Nacho, and then be waiting so that they can send in, like, a hit squad after they grab Nacho to take all of them out. Kill two birds with one stone. Again, something Gus loves to do, right?
He does. Yeah, he loves efficiency. It's a good...
I might have just figured it out. He was trying to lure out his assassins so that he could take them out, so there would be even less of a threat. But then that starts this whole cycle up again, right? It's like, okay, who did that?
And I also have to wonder... So I say all hell breaks loose. By that, I mean Nacho goes out the back and suddenly people are on him, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, the cousins come in.
And it seems like there are two groups here. The cousins and then everybody else. Who are those other people?
Because
the other people didn't have the same marching orders as the cousins. The cousins were told to take him alive.
I think this is one of those things where the plan is poorly communicated ahead of time. Okay. It's just like, or we're like, you know, you get a cowboy in the group, right? Who's like, yeehaw, and he's shooting off his pistols.
Yep.
you just get a loose cannon, right?
Sure.
Some guy who's taking it on himself to go in there and try and clean up, finish the job. And they were like, no, we told you alive. Because all they say is alive. They don't even say, hey, we said this before the mission. We want this guy alive. They're just like, alive.
Yeah,
that's
maybe
my impression.
That's fair.
this guy forgot that the orders were to take right. Nacho alive.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Oh man, so Nacho ends up ramming two cars, front and back, ram in reverse and then ram in forwards, and gets away. But he has a flat, and we learn later that he abandoned the truck. So he didn't get away very far.
No, he's out there in the wind.
Like, he's out there in the fucking the desert the again. Yeah.
I do wonder where Lalo is, right? We haven't seen Lalo this entire episode.
No. He's out
collecting the proof.
Collecting the proof. Again, whatever that could mean.
Right.
I'm with you now on that. I have no idea. I have no clue what could possibly tie Gus to Nacho at this point. I guess we're going to see. All right. Next, we go to Jimmy getting a late night phone call with someone fired up about something. Kim says she wants to come. And they have different opinions on what will work on this particular client, the carrot or the stick.
Yeah.
And they both end up being a little bit right, but mostly Kim.
You can see Kim not trusting Jimmy, right?
His methods. Yeah.
Because she's like, oh, you're going to give them money or whatever. And he's like, yeah, trust me. I know these people, you want to sweeten the pot or whatever, and especially with her. I think like he kind of understands her, but I think he underestimates how much she hates him. Like,
to be clear, we're talking about Betsy Kettleman again. That's who is called. I don't think I said that in the beginning, but
So I think like I don't know. She's definitely right to go on this, right? Because mm-hmm. we see in the next scene, Jimmy would have failed.
It works perfectly, yeah, with her.
If he went there with just the carrot, right? Mm-hmm. They needed the stick. But, like, I don't know. I don't know. You can tell that Kim is losing faith in Jimmy and yeah. his abilities.
It's too soft. It's too yeah. soft. She needs a hard man now.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently. That's basically it for that scene. We're back in the chicken trailer. Actually, we're seeing a sniper with really terrible muzzle awareness.
Sweep Mike left and
aiming right at Mike. Yeah, mm-hmm. I wonder if that was an intentional shot. It had to have been. And Gus, Tyrus, and Mike are discussing Nacho's fate once again.
Yeah, Gus orders Mike to bring Nacho's dad. No, he doesn't order Mike. He orders Tyrus.
To bring his dad in.
To bring his dad in, and Mike refuses to let that happen.
Flat out refuses, yeah.
And
there's a...
We don't even really get the resolution of this, because like Nacho calls him, and Gus lets him answer the phone. Yeah. And then he says, look, it's not my call to bring you in or not, I think, is what they're implying. And then Nacho asks to talk with Gus, and he agrees.
And we don't really get to see anything else other than that. For one, I would like to call a little bit of bullshit on the fact that we can't hear the other side of this conversation, because that man is old, and you know he's got his phone volume cranked literally as high as it can go, yeah. especially on those little flip phones. Give me a break. But it's fine. I get it. It's a TV show.
Plus, he's a cop, a lot of gunfire throughout his life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just like... training alone with guns is enough to mess up your hearing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call BS. And I also call BS that Gustavo Fring would put a handkerchief full of little glass shards right back in his pocket. What?
Shake it out.
Man must be... He didn't shake it out. He didn't shake it out.
It's true.
He picked up, number one, glass shards with his bare hands. What are you doing, man? And number two, he, like, wipes off his hand lightly with his handkerchief and just puts it right back in his pocket. That is a nasty surprise waiting for you.
And we've seen Gus many times cleaning things up off the floor. Like, that's his job. His job is to walk around and clean shit up off the ground. We see him with his, you know, bucket, his dustbin on a stick, and his broom, constantly walking around the parking lot, scooping stuff up.
Right.
And here he's just going to do it with his hands.
This is a lot like
the chicken fryer, though, right? Like the one that I talked about last episode, right. Where Lyle was washing it and scrubbing it. Not good enough, right? Mm-hmm. This is a manifestation of his mental state. It's not like how Gus would normally act.
Of course.
Gus normally wouldn't knock that glass off the table.
No.
And Gus knocking a glass off the table is like Nacho punching a hole in the wall and kicking down like a bedroom door or something, right?
Basically, yeah.
Like Gus has an oopsie accident.
Then he is clearly shaken up.
Right.
Far, far past what he's used to.
Yeah. And him cleaning it up without the use of a broom or whatever is
It was the actions
like
of
symbolic.
A madman, so that's how I know he's sweating.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely insane. And now, finally, the scene.
Yeah.
For the final scene of the episode, we find ourselves back at the Kettleman's very weird tax prep business. We are treated to Jimmy and Kim, good cop, bad copping, carrot and sticking their way into an agreement with the pair.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing about the interactions with the Kettleman's, I think throughout the series, is every time they interact with Jimmy and they talk about lawyers, they in this scene and the scene at the beginning of this episode, they say like, when referring to other lawyers, that they're real lawyers, mm-hmm. right? She says, real, legitimate. We went to four real, legitimate lawyers.
Yes.
And they told us this. I just love how she points that out at every opportunity.
She does. She really likes to, stab with her words.
Uh-huh.
And never get stabbed in return.
And I like that she's no dummy, too. Mm-hmm. She just nails the motivation here, right? Like, you guys want...
Yeah, no, she accused them of everything that they're guilty of, right. Just like the De Guzman lawyers earlier in the episode.
Yeah, it's the thing that's so brilliant about Jimmy's plans most of the time is, you can see through them, but Does that mean you're not on the hook?
Right.
Like, oh, a worm, you know, a fish that sees it's on a hook is still on a hook, right?
Absolutely. I got the sense through most of this scene that Jimmy feels a little bit guilty for basically bringing in the bulldog in the form of Kim. Why? These people are not good people.
These are terrible people.
They're terrible people. Betsy Kettleman could put on a workshop on being really, really terrible and not owning up to your mistakes.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And then the kicker here that I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be piecing together, but every client you see is a very old.
Yes.
Looks like kind of infirmed. Mm-hmm. And I think they're both Native American, the two that you see, which to me says they like set up a cheat tax operation on a reservation in New Mexico, taking advantage of old ass Native Americans.
It's about the worst. It's about the worst. And Kim calls them out on it.
Right, as she
beautifully. Oh my God. That part of the scene was very cathartic for me, because I feel very similarly to Kim about the Kettlemans, which is to say, you were not victims.
No.
You were perpetrators.
And they're like, we lost everything.
No, you didn't. You still have a house and clothes and kids and everything. Like, you're fine.
Yeah.
And also this shady ass business.
Right. I almost wonder if this is even the IRS criminal investigations.
I was wondering who she called. Yeah.
I'm not even sure that this isn't a put on. Like, oh, she didn't actually call the IRS. She just called one of the, I don't know, film students or whatever.
I was thinking it might be one of the film students, but the cadence was pretty good. I don't know.
It was. It seemed legit, and that's why it works. But, and I guess ultimately it doesn't matter, right? Either one would serve the same purpose.
Right. It was the stick. Yeah. It was just the stick to say, we know that you are actively engaging in criminal activity right now, and we will absolutely expose you if you try to expose us.
Mm-hmm.
So take that. Chop, chop.
It's also very deliciously perfect that, you know, we talked about this inflatable and how he got the idea here, but now finding out that they're tax cheats, and just how like dishonest and shitty they are, for Jimmy to adopt something from their image is even more perfect.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that angle.
Yeah.
The shyster angle.
Mm-hmm.
Shysters, all of them.
And there's that line from Jimmy too, wolves and sheep at the end, which, having done a complete rewatch, I'm not sure I would have remembered this had I not watched this in the last month. But that line is directly from the episode where we flash back to Jimmy's childhood and he's at the general store or whatever, corner store his dad owns, and his dad gets scammed. And the guy who scams him takes the money he scammed from his dad, buys cigarettes at his store with him, and then tells Jimmy, like, the world's full of wolves and sheep. You're either going to be a wolf or you're going to get eaten or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a direct reference to that. And you can tell in Jimmy's demeanor here, like, he gets what Kim's doing, but he also feels bad about it now.
She looks a lot like a wolf to him in that moment. And it's funny that he would feel any kind of way about that when he has been a wolf this entire time.
Oh, totally. And so, the sheep that she's eating are pieces of shit,
right?
Yeah,
they're not sheep. They're just bad wolves. They're lame wolves.
Right.
They're lame, boring wolves. So, what are you even doing, Jimmy?
What's between a sheep and a wolf?
A sheep.
Well, a real animal that's like halfway between the ferocity of a sheep and the ferocity of a wolf.
Who would win in a fight between... No, joking.
A sheepdog? A sheepdog. That's halfway between a sheep and a wolf.
Yeah, okay. All right, I'll give it to you just because I can't think of anything better.
Yeah.
I like it.
Anyway, who drives after them at the end? Because the very last shot is some Mike-looking car, right? Some big boat.
It's an old car.
Boxy boat of a car. Yeah.
But it's in good shape, and the person driving it is tall. That's all I got.
Was it the woman who was leaving as they were entering?
It didn't.
Had she
leave.
Just gotten in her car and just got her keys out of her purse like 10 minutes later? Because she was moving so slow.
I see what you're doing. No, I don't think it was her, because that car didn't leave from the parking lot. It was like parked somewhere else. obviously watching them. So who who is on to them? Already? He's north again? He went south to go north?
He gotta get down to get up, is what they say. It's not true. I say the opposite. I was thinking, okay, maybe it's Lalo and maybe the proof is Jimmy, right? He can directly connect them to Gus, but I'm not sure he can.
Hmm.
Also, you're right. Like, Lalo went south. So who the hell is it? Would Gus have somebody on?
Do you think it could be, do you think Howard's already onto them and following them? Is that a ridiculous theory?
Really?
Yeah.
Got a PI or something?
I mean, like we have been saying, Howard's Ernie. Too smart and too hateful.
Ernie got fired.
Yeah, Ernie got fired, and also he drives a car that could not be more different from that car.
That's true, yeah. He drives
some Tokyo Drift
stuff. Family sedan.
Yeah. Yep.
Family.
Drives a white SUV. Oh, family. I get it. God.
Yeah, sorry. No, that was a really subtle joke.
It's good. The voice at the end. Mm-hmm. I caught up with you.
What were you going to say? Sorry, I derailed you with Ernie. You were talking about Howard, like being on to them maybe.
Oh, yeah. No, because he's too smart and he's too suspicious of Jimmy because Jimmy keeps coming after him. So why would he not just immediately think, God damn it, Jimmy is coming after me again for some reason, right when I'm trying to get my shit back together.
And there is like a moment when Howard considers the cocaine, when mm-hmm. it falls out of his locker last episode.
Yeah.
He like just kind of looks into the middle distance. And that's always the sign that like somebody's thinking, right? Or yeah. has like an idea.
Right. That's the shorthand.
Yeah. So he might have been on to Jimmy just immediately. Like, oh, coke falls out of my locker right in front of Cliff.
Mm-hmm.
What a coincidence.
Right.
Jimmy. You could be right. That could be somebody from Howard.
That would be, or at least Howard immediately suspecting Jimmy would be my suspicion.
Yeah.
Because of all their history.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We will see. Is there anything else that you would like to say about this final wonderful scene?
I don't think so. We did not gather up feedback.
Because we could not. Because logistics. Because time.
I mean, time and money.
Money?
Yeah. We could have paid somebody to do it, and we didn't.
Did you hear that? You could have been getting paid this whole time, and you've been doing it for free.
You could have gotten
paid. Suckers. Me?
You've been doing it for free, sucker.
Oh, no. I'm the sucker.
Yeah.
It is I who is sucked. No.
Anyway, yeah, so we do not have feedback. We will be doing feedback for next episode, though. I promise. There won't be.
Well, if people write in, we'll be doing feedback. That's on you. We don't control that.
That's true.
You do.
And if you'd like to send feedback, you can do so at bcs@baldmove.com. That's the abbreviation for better cast and or call Saul.
Also beneath ceaseless skies, but we are not affiliated. Carry also, on.
Butter carrot soup.
Butter carrot soup, just like mama used to make.
Yeah, that's the mnemonic device for the better call Saul email.
Mm-hmm.
Butter carrot soup.
Butter carrot soup.
Just remember that. Butter carrot soup at baldmove.com. And I guess we'll see you guys next week.
We will see you next week, whether you want to or not.
Till then.
Till then.
I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
See ya.
Bye.